Alexander Snitker, libertarian, Republican, and political hack. And Adrian Wiley, born-again anarchist and political has-been. Banter, blather, and joke about current events while attempting to figure out whether to keep trying to salvage our constitutional republic or just stock up on marshmallows to roast on the smoldering embers of society. It's time for Unattended Baggage.
Why, thank you, Ledge. Hello, everyone in Podcastville or Internet Land or wherever you may reside. This is Alex, co-host, Unattended Baggage. Along with me is my radio life mate, the man, the myth, the legend, Mr. Adrian, the man who I aspire to be like someday, Wiley. That is a work and not a shoot, by the way. How are you?
I'm doing quite well. And you read the teleprompter well, just as I expected you would.
Actually, when I read that, I thought it was actually kind of funny. So I was like, I'm going to go.
You're going to go with it? Yeah.
I'm going to go.
Did you actually see that before you just read it? Or
No. When I started doing the music down, I'm reading this part, because I do read the intro every time. I saw that. I'm like, oh, so he changed it. Okay.
Yeah. See, for you listeners at home, Alex is very scripted about certain parts of the show, and he's always very scripted about that. And so every now and again, I like to play with his script to see how well he'll ad lib. But, you know, basically, he just, like any good talking head, he just read the She Can Tell You About the Plane Crash with the gleam in her eye.
You know, it's really weird, because while I really do like the beginning of the show to have scripted, to do it the same way every time, but then, you know, mix around after that and kind of just go ad lib. But it seems like if you start it the same way every time, that it provides that kind of calming.
It's a continuity thing. I get it. I get it. Now, if I had my druthers, it would be, much more of a performance art type of thing where people were 15 minutes in and had no idea what they were listening to.
Probably.
I don't know that we would have many listeners, though, if we went that route.
You know,
there is a certain level of continuity that I think is required.
You know, this is funny, because what I'm hoping, and again, this is down the road, this is not anytime soon, but if you've ever watched wrestling, this is where I actually got this from.
You
got
to quit going to wrestling things, man.
No. This is
the last time I watched wrestling, Gordon Solie was announcing.
I got you. But like, there's this, in wrestling, there's this guy by the name of Paul Heyman.
Okay.
Who is the advocate for Brock Lesnar, right? So he's like the mic. He's the mouthpiece guy for Brock Lesnar. He's not a wrestler. He's like the guy that goes and talks for Brock Lesnar.
So he's a wrestler's pitch man. And I don't know who Brock Lesnar is either.
Well, Brock Lesnar actually was an MMA guy. Like he's
another thing I don't follow.
Okay. So, well, at any rate, Brock is a big, beefy looking dude, right? And is one of the, you know, like really big and beefy looking. However, he talks like, not like Mike Tyson, but Mike Tyson-ish.
Right. Like, so high-pitched, feminine,
kind of.
He's not
tough. He's not a tough talker. But Paul is a phenomenal guy that talks, but he's a fat guy that, you know, like an old fat Jewish guy, right?
Right.
But Paul Heyman, he says the same thing every time. And what happens is the crowd will just repeat what
he says.
He's like, hello, my name is Paul Heyman. And, you know, and the whole crowd goes with it.
Right.
So when we do the live broadcast at 100 with 1,000 people in a room, mm-hmm. I want to hear everybody's going, hello, everyone in Podcastville or Internet Land or wherever you may reside. This is Alex, co-host, unattended. Like, I want to hear the crowd do that. So I don't want to switch the beginning of, like, you know, the Alex Snitker, you know, libertarian, Republican, and political hack. Like, I want a whole crowd to call you a has-been.
You know, here's the thing, though. There's a whole lot of things within that little fantasy of yours that you should talk to your therapist about.
You think so?
Yeah.
I think there's a lot going on in there.
There's a lot going on there. I mean, we got some delusions of grandeur, obviously, going on there.
I ran for the U.S. Senate as a libertarian. Do you think that I don't have delusions of grandeur since like 2010?
Yeah.
You ran for governor. You want to talk about delusions of grandeur?
Oh, hell, man. My ego knows no bounds. So, yeah, yes. I don't have a look.
If your ego was a percentage of the vote, it'd be like 98%. Like, it'd be Kim Jong-un numbers.
I'm not saying that by me accusing you of narcissistic tendencies
that you don't share.
I don't realize that I may be afflicted with the same condition.
Yes. Well, that's why we do a podcast, by the way.
Right.
Like, that's the thing. Like, we were like, ah, you know what? People aren't hearing from us a lot anymore. Let's do a show and have people start hearing from us again. Right. Because our opinions are so damn important that people need to hear them.
People must hear what we have to say.
Oh, speaking of that, by the way, speaking of must hear what we have to say, I am going to ask you in the beginning this episode for everybody listening to do me a favor and share this out on your social media and to invite people to listen to the show. I don't do this enough, so I want to make sure to say it in the beginning. Please do us a favor and share this episode on your social media and invite your friends to listen to the show. In addition to that, whatever podcasting platform that you listen to it on, make sure that you subscribe and that you give us a thumbs up or a 5-star rating, depending on whatever services that you use, that you go in there, give us an up and a 5-star rating. And if you have a service and if you use a podcasting service that we don't have listed there, that you don't see me post every damn week, make sure you let me know so I can actually start adding that one to the list of different social media platforms that we are our podcast platforms that we actually use.
But whatever you do, do not sign up for our mailing list.
What do you mean don't sign up?
Because Alex will spam you mercilessly.
That's not true. That's not
mercilessly.
True. That's not true.
I get 5 emails a week about this
No, that's bullshit. You do not.
I do. As a Patreon subscriber, every time something hits Patreon.
Oh.
Yeah. It's about 3 emails.
Here's the thing.
I get about 3 emails
I will
a week.
Say this. I do try to not, I only put out the show stuff, or I'll do some pictures sometimes. I'm going to try to do more pictures sometimes, though, during the week and stuff.
Knock off the dick pics, though. That's getting gratuitous.
Oh, sorry. My bad.
Yeah.
You know, what's funny is one of the things I did want to talk about was I kind of feel this week that I am getting back to a pre-campaigning, when I was running for office, kind of normalcy in my life as far as my relationship with politics go.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, I know exactly. I went through this a few years ago, so I know exactly the process.
I'm now more engaged with my job and with my career, and that's what I'm looking at is the future and not really the politics stuff.
Right.
And I went down and my brother-in-law is at my mother's house with my sister because they moved from Spring Hill down to Newport Richey, but they need to get their house ready the new house ready to go. So they need a place to stay, right? So they stayed there. And so we were hanging out there and I haven't been there. Again, there was a little falling out, things like that. But things are getting back to normal now, but my mom hasn't actually touched anything in the garage really since my dad passed away. So all my dad's tools and his work area and all that stuff, all still there.
And how many years has that been?
9.
Yeah.
It's been a long time.
Right.
Or 8 or 9 or something like that. It's been a while, though. It's been a long time. But it was just kind of, one, it was nice to see, but also we kind of need to help her out because, there's a lot of tools that she doesn't know how to use that, we can keep the space with tools that she would use, but clean the space up in a way in which would almost, I don't want to say pay homage, but, would kind of maintain the integrity of this being a workplace with tools, but being one that everybody can use.
Well, yeah, your dad's garage was a marvelous the way he had it set up. I mean, damn near perfect for, a workshop/garage.
Yes, yes. Well, and the smoke eater's still there.
And, after now I think about it, I see where I get your, I see where some of your obsession with boxes and stuff like that comes from. Because your dad was very much, a place for everything and everything in its place.
Yeah.
So that kind of makes sense now. That acorn didn't fall too far, but it added a few, compulsions along the way.
Well, and it actually
a little bit of OCD.
And it missed the ability to actually work with wood. It really did miss that. I missed that one. My dad knew how to use tools and was very good at it, was a good handyman. I don't possess any of those skills, really, at the end of the day.
But you can put them in boxes.
I can put... I'll put them in some boxes. I will put them in boxes. So it was nice to... it was nice to sit there for a little bit. And, I went down there, had a cigar with Ray. We hung out. And...
Your brother-in-law.
Yeah, my brother-in-law, Ray. And then we're going to, once a month now, we're going to do dinner at my mom's house.
Oh, that's nice.
So it'll be nice. It'll be a lot of fun. I was actually... Like I said, it was just kind of nice, just getting back to, again, a sense of normalcy. When I ran for office, man,
Well, it wasn't.
It was a radical change in my life.
Oh, yeah. And it continued for a decade.
Yeah. I mean, yeah. Like, and I'm just moving back the other way now, so.
Right. Yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
But it was nice to have it. Nice to have it, though. One other thing that's been happening also is that I am now definitely drinking more coffee. Like, not even just, I used to drink coffee sparingly when I was forced to, if I was in a sales meeting. And like I was offered coffee by a person I was trying to sell something to. The rule was if somebody offered you coffee, you always take it. You know what I mean? You never not took it. You always took the coffee. But I didn't really like coffee then. I'm starting to like coffee more now. So I'm starting to have coffee more, which I think is just kind of funny.
Yeah. Yeah. I do find that interesting. Now you, up until your illness, were a huge Mountain Dew drinker.
Oh, an unhealthy amount of Mountain Dew.
Yeah. Yeah. It was a preposterous amount of Mountain Dew.
It was definitely a gargantuan amount of Mountain Dew.
Yeah. And after your brush with type 2 diabetes, which you've completely reversed, by the way.
Pretty much so, yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, don't get me wrong. I still have it.
Right. But
I haven't lost it. I still need to lose about 15 or 20 more pounds. If I lose 15 or 20 more pounds, though, I could get off. The only thing I have to take is I have to take the smallest amount of metformin that you have to take. Like, it's the very smallest amount, but I do take that twice a day.
Well, my question to you, though, is after giving up Mountain Dew, did that caffeine, that lack of caffeine that you were getting affect you? Because you had a long gap where you weren't having any caffeine whatsoever. Now you're drinking coffee.
Here's the thing. It's definitely got to have an effect. I don't feel like I feel the effect, though. I know it's got to. I know that now I have some caffeine in me that it's having an effect again. Look, I remember when I got off the caffeine though. Like when I got off the Mountain Dew, for like a week I had a headache. I mean, I was in the hospital at the same time too, and I had a lot of other things going on.
Oh, this was while you're in the Well, dude, you had a lot more going on.
But
than
I had.
Caffeine
a, but
withdrawal.
I had. A, but a caffeine withdrawal was part of it though. Like it was a constant 24/7 headache for days.
Yeah.
Just to wean off of it, and then I didn't have anything for a little while that had any caffeine in it at all. And then I started drinking coffee, and I'll probably, like, it all depends. Like, I don't drink it every day, so it's not like I have to have it first thing in the morning.
Right.
But on, like, when I go to the office, like, on Mondays and Fridays, I go to the office. And when I go to the office on Mondays and Fridays, I will have at least one or two cups of coffee there. But I always have, like, a French vanilla coffee or something like that. And then I put the fake sugar and creamer in it, and then, you know, go with it from there.
Well, see, I ask because I drink an insane amount of coffee. I approaching two pots a day.
Wow.
Yeah. I drink coffee all day.
I'm surprised you don't drink it here.
For some reason, I always have a soda here. And yes, it's one of the few times that I have a soda. But there's a, you know, I drank 32 ounces of coffee on the way here. So.
Did you really?
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Jesus.
I got a big to-go mug. But the point is I wake up in the morning and I still have morning wood when I'm brewing coffee. It's like the first thing I do. You know what I'm saying? It's like brew coffee, then I'll go take a leak. You know?
Oh, shit.
So I was thinking, you know, I was tempted to just try going without coffee for a few days to see if I actually slip into a coma or something.
See if you could do it.
Yeah, I'm curious at this point because I'm obviously an addict, you know, so.
It's the norm now.
Yeah, oh, absolutely. Yeah, it has been for, you know, many years.
Yeah.
And I used to do occasional cream and sugar, but now it's just, you know, all black all the time, like my men. Yeah, I'm curious to see whether, you know, how bad the withdrawals would be and what my energy levels would be without it. You know, I have a hunch that I might actually be a complete sloth. You know, I might only be functional for 2 hours a day.
But you haven't done it yet, though, right?
I have not. And I'm not even sure if I will, but it's just something I was considering. So if you've done the same thing, please drop us a line at Unattended Baggage on Facebook or whatever the hell our Facebook is, and don't sign up for our mailing list.
Why do you not want us as people to? I want people to sign up to the.
You're
mailing
a spammer.
List.
You're a spammer.
I'm not
That's
a spammer.
You're a total spammer. But anyway, that
not
wasn't the
with
point
that
I was
list.
Making.
I'm not.
What are we talking about today?
All right. So the first thing that we did want to bring up was the coronavirus. It's in the news still. It seems like the media is telling you that it's gotten worse. Where more people have gotten it, and more people have died because of it. So I mean,
yeah,
it's not
crazy, isn't it? We're over 200 people have died from this now. I mean, it's absolutely horrifying.
Yeah. And they now on Friday,
By the way, in the same time period, about 100,000 people globally have died from the seasonal flu.
In the same time frame?
Yeah.
Like in a month?
Yeah, because this is, for the Northern Hemisphere, this is like the peak of flu season.
Yeah, I didn't know that. Actually.
Yeah, well, it's seasonal. So, you know, in the wintertime in the Northern Hemisphere, which is right now we're in the heart of it, you have a big spike in flu cases and deaths, and then it tapers off throughout the summer months. But then it goes into South America. You know, that's science again, fifth grade, how that works. But yeah, I mean, basically, there's about 650,000 people that die every year from the flu. And we don't seem to freak out over that, but you know, 200 people die from coronavirus, and it's oh my God, end of the world.
Yeah. So let me read a little bit here. So the Trump administration declared a public health emergency in the U.S. Friday in response to the global coronavirus outbreak. Today, President Trump took the decisive action to minimize the risk of new. Oh, the coronavirus in the United States, said U.S. Health and Human Services Secretary Alex Azar at the White House press conference. The risk of contracting the coronavirus in the U.S. is low, something that Federal Health Administration officials emphasize repeatedly. We're working to keep the risk low. See, here's the thing, too. Like, you're going to do this big action for something that you will admit on the stage that is low. But because the media is losing their ever-loving minds on this thing, and China is, you know, going batshit crazy about this stuff, that you're going to freak out everybody and do, we have a, you know.
Yeah, and I don't get why. That's what I can't get to the root of. Normally it's like, you know, follow the money or you know, follow the power, and you can get to the root of the why. But the why, I can't find the why in this. Why is China putting their entire country on lockdown, essentially? Why is Apple and McDonald's and Starbucks closing their businesses in China? I mean, this is, by way of comparison, okay, this has infected a few thousand people and has a mortality rate of, they estimate, about 3%. The normal, just plain old-fashioned seasonal flu every year infects millions and millions of people and has a mortality rate globally of 5.9%.
Yeah.
So the flu is much deadlier by way of the stats so far, and is exponentially, like by thousands of times more communicable and deadly. Why is this causing such a response? It makes zero sense to me. The cold viruses, the coronavirus, the rhinovirus, the influenza virus, they mutate constantly. So this is a new mutation of the coronavirus. Big deal. This doesn't make any sense whatsoever. And now, if you've traveled to China and you're an American citizen, you're going to be quarantined when you get back to the U.S.,
Yeah, quarantined.
I mean, it's insanity. If you are not a U.S. citizen, you can't come to the U.S. anymore if you traveled to China.
Yeah.
They're literally restricting any travel from China. It's the most insane. This is going to have a huge effect on the global economy. And it's not, as far as diseases goes, this is nothing. It's literally no big deal. It just makes sense. Do you have any theories as to why? And it doesn't make sense that China is doing a power grab. China already has the power. They have complete control. They have almost totalitarian control over their people already. The fact that they can do this and shut down entire cities and the people go along with it shows you that, yeah, they already have that power.
Okay, well, here's the thing. So my theory on this one is it's a mixed theory. Because you have to take a look at two different things for the mixed theory to make sense. The first one is there's a media response. And the second thing is that there is a government response. Now, which one comes first, the media response or the government response, and which one feeds the other? Again, that's really an argument of the chicken and the egg and which one comes first. Like, it's hard to tell. I think with the media response, though, they want to keep, look, if they keep you scared, they keep you watching TV. And they keep you watching the news and they keep you paying attention to it. So if it bleeds, it leads kind of thing. And this one, I think for the media, that's what they do because they do it with all of them. You know what I mean? The new one, you know, the newest pandemic or the newest potential pandemic is always what they're talking about. That's first and foremost. Now, the government, I think that they're doing this as when they see an opportunity to pretend that they're needed. This is why they get so big into why they're doing it, and to make it look like they're doing something. So not only do they feel like they're needed, but they feel like they're there to protect you. So when they take more of your money, that they're somehow justified in doing it. But let me give you what they were saying as their reasoning for the intense focus on the outbreak. So U.S. officials also tried to explain their reasoning for an intense focus on this outbreak, which so far has not led to any deaths in the U.S., though it has led to more than 250 in China. I often get asked about the influenza outbreak, which has led to at least 8,000 deaths in the U.S. this season. Again, hold on.
That's just in the U.S.
That's just in the U.S. But, yeah. But hold on, though. The difference is it hasn't killed anybody in China.
No, it's
killed. Or it killed 250 in China. No one in America.
Right.
In America, the regular flu has killed 8,000 people.
Right.
And they're focusing all their effort on the coronavirus. Again, like.
Right. Yeah.
So let me, I'll keep going. So I often get asked about the influenza outbreak, which has led to at least 8,000 deaths in the U.S. this season, says Anthony Fauci, director of the National Institute of Allergy and Infectious Disease, which is part of the NIH. People want to know why we're paying so much attention to the novel coronavirus. In contrast to the seasonal flu, which is predictable, Fauci said, there are a lot of unknowns with the coronavirus. The number of cases has steeply inclined each and every day, Fauci noted. In addition, at the beginning of the outbreak, it wasn't clear whether the infected person without symptoms could transmit the virus to another person. Now we know for sure that there are asymptomatic infections, Fauci said.
Right. That essentially, that means someone can be a carrier of the virus without actually getting sick from it themselves.
Yeah. But here's the thing, though. Again, it's all a matter of perspective. In China, where this thing has started, which would be the place that has the most deaths from it, is 250. In America, we already have 8,000 deaths from the regular flu, right?
Right. And that's just in the U.S.
And that's just in the
U.S. Globally, that number is
way higher.
It's probably like 200,000, like I said before. Yeah, yeah. Or at least 100,000, I'd say. For this season, yeah, it's got to be like 200,000 so far, at least. Yeah.
Like, it's in America, 8,000 deaths. In
right.
China, 250. Compare one to the other. What would you... Okay, if I told you there was a disease that in China would kill 250 people...
No, wait a second. If I told you that in the last, you know, let's say 2 months, okay, we had one disease that has killed 250 people and another disease that has killed 200,000.
Mm-hmm.
That's what you want to compare it to.
No, you're right. You're right. I was even being less than, yeah.
Right.
Like, which one would you rather have?
Right. Yeah, exactly.
Give me a corona with a lime.
Yeah. And that's the funny thing is, and the mortality rate so far for coronavirus, it's been about 3%. So about 3% of the people who are infected with the virus die. And most of those are elderly or immunocompromised.
Yeah.
So for the influenza, the seasonal influenza, the mortality rate is 6%, 5.9% globally. So that's, you know, it's double. Influenza, the flu, is twice as fatal. Now, it's also for, you know, generally for the elderly, people who are sick already, you know, or have a immunocompromise. But, you know, again, it just makes no sense. But I actually have a little different theory on this. I don't think there's any... I mean, what you're saying is a little bit true, that, you know, the government does things to... you know, show their power.
Justify their existence
to show the people, hey, we're in control. We got this, when in a lot of cases they aren't. And the media, of course, is going to go with whatever sells the most ads. But I actually think that this one is more people driven. And I think that what's happening, there's been a slight change in humanity over the past couple of decades. And a lot of that has to do with the entertainment that we're exposed to. And the fact that we've seen hundreds of outbreak movies and zombie movies and it always starts with a virus like this, I think that has been so hammered into our heads from the entertainment world. I mean, look at, you even have things on the internet comparing this to, what's the Raccoon City, the Umbrella Corporation, Resident Evil.
Yeah.
You know, because there was a lab, it was unrelated to coronavirus, but it's still a virology lab in China that used the Umbrella Corporation logo. You know, so there's things like that. And that's what I really think is the driving force behind this, is that people, the lines between reality and fantasy and what's true and rational and a good horror movie is getting blurred in people's minds. So I think that people tend to react less rationally to these things than they should. And I think that is, and that happens with the rank and file public, that happens with people in the media, and that happens with people in government. And I think they're, all of them are infected by the stupidity of it.
Okay. Now, let me ask you another question. One of the movies that you're that you can talk about when it comes to like the, you're saying, you know, life imitating art kind of thing.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. But not really. People's expectations is that life will imitate art when it's, there's no prayer of that happening.
Okay, but
there will never be a virus that turns us into zombies.
Correct. But you remember like the movie 12 Monkeys, right?
Yeah.
And
yeah. Oh, are you talking about 12 Monkeys or 28 Weeks?
No, 12 Monkeys.
Okay, you have, that happens to be my all-time favorite movie, by the way.
12 Monkeys?
Is my all-time without question favorite movie. Yes.
Really?
Yeah. Number one on the list.
Huh.
I can quote every line of it. But okay. Go ahead.
Okay, well then you're right. Then, let me see if I'm right though. That the people that put the virus out, we're trying to end humanity.
Well, the one guy.
The one guy.
Yeah, there was one guy from a virology lab. Was his intention was to end humanity. Correct.
Do you think that that's a thing?
Do I? Yeah, but
like, do you think that you again?
I know where I know.
There's a lot of conspiracy theories with the coronavirus. Is there any conspiracy theory that you would buy that somebody would actually try to, like, an extreme environmentalist that would like to end humanity on the planet that would go around and kill everybody?
Yes, I think that there are absolutely people out there who, given the opportunity, would try to do something like that. But I also think that it is literally, from all the laws of biology that I'm aware of,
almost impossible.
Impossible to do that. You cannot completely eradicate a species like man. You could do it in certain examples, but you cannot eradicate mankind with a virus. It's absolutely impossible.
Just because there's too many of us and we're two different places and our ability to adapt to that is
the key. Yeah, our ability to adapt supersedes any life form that's ever existed on Earth.
I do find it funny though that you have people that want humanity to end though. Like that. Here's the thing. Like, I don't understand this thing. I don't understand the extreme environmentalists that are like, they're so hell bent on like somehow maintaining some kind of pristine look to the environment. Like that's the way it's supposed to be, whether it's with man or without man, that they would want to see man die off in order to have it go back to some kind of natural balance, when in all reality, you could have that natural balance be hit by a freaking asteroid and kill all those same life forms that you were trying to do. And the odds of that happening are like, it's a matter of when, not if.
Right. Yeah. That will happen at some point.
But you'd be, I mean,
the sun's going to go nova at some point too.
Yeah. Yeah. So, like, you know, no matter what, like we've got
a limited amount of time.
Humanity does, which, you know, what's funny is I started watching, God, I don't want to go off the subject real quick, but I do want to talk about this though. There's a show on Netflix called basically Mars, where it talks about like setting up the first colony in Mars.
Oh yeah. I wanted to watch that. It's a faux documentary.
Yeah.
It's like very realistic how they do it.
But it's half of it is a real documentary though.
Okay.
Like, okay, so they interview like Elon Musk, why he started SpaceX.
Okay.
Like, and he's part of it. So like when you go to the 2016 timeframe or that time frame,
right,
that's interviewing people now. Yeah. And how his goal is to get the rocket to be able to land and things like this.
He's already done that.
Yeah. So like, but you're watching that part, and then they go like to 2039 to where they got this thing. I mean, don't get me wrong. They started going down like environmental roads and, you know, private company. The weirdest part about it is that in watching this show, if you know what's going on, you realize that it was private industry that got them to Mars, because SpaceX is private industry.
Yeah.
But they're almost trying to be against private industry when they get to Mars, because some other group went there, set up shop, and started mining resources, but then sucking off of the governmental system over there. Like, but in a way of like, you're a private industry as well.
Well,
and you set up some rules to allow people to set up there.
Hang on a second, though. It is private industry to some degree, but SpaceX is getting some of its funding from NASA as well, because some of the stuff it's doing is for NASA. Other stuff is for private, you know, like, for example, Verizon is paying them to put their satellites into space. But a lot of it is government stuff, too. So it's a kind of a hybrid between private sector and government right now.
Yeah. No. And I'm not even disagreeing with that part per se, other than to say that if you didn't have some private company that was like leading the charge on it.
Oh, yeah.
And you just didn't have the government.
Oh, NASA by itself? NASA by itself hasn't put a man in space in, 15 years?
Yeah.
Well, you know what
happens is because when somebody dies, they just quit doing it.
Well, yeah, that too. You know, well, frankly, the U.S. hasn't done any manned space flight in at least a decade. I mean, when did the shuttle program end?
This is a while back.
It seems like about a decade now.
Yeah.
You know, and so we got
the Russians taking us up.
Yeah, we had to turn to the Russians to hitch a ride with them. And now, you know, we've got SpaceX, but they're not doing any manned space flight yet.
No,
they're
not
coming
yet.
Soon. Very soon,
though. Oh, they are.
Yeah.
And again, their job is to get to Mars. Like if you listen and if you watch the show, the mission of the show, or not the mission, but the mission of SpaceX is that we have to get a colony on Mars
right
before a catastrophic accident happens here in America. On Earth.
Well, we need to do it before the AI takes over.
Or before the AI.
And actually, every time I say that, I laugh to myself because I sound like a crazy person, but Elon Musk is doing it for that exact reason.
Yeah, like you and Elon are on the same page.
Oh, totally on the same page. Yeah.
So, but the one thing I wanted to bring up is this guy named Les Knight, and he is he is campaigning for the extinction of the human race. With us gone, other species will have a chance to recover, is what basically...
Now, see, that's... right there, the premise is flawed. You know, there's very few species right now that are threatened by man. You know? There's just not.
Let me read this first paragraph, by the way. Like, this is funny. 50 years ago, I concluded that the best thing for the planet would be a peaceful phase out of human existence. We're causing the extinction of hundreds of thousands of other species. With us gone, I believe ecosystems will be restored and there will be enough of everything. No more fighting over resources. The idea wasn't as well received as I had hoped.
Wait.
What?
First of all, this guy has no idea how nature actually works, because with or without man, you know, a thousand species every day go extinct.
Yeah.
Period. End of story. That's the way it's been since the first amino acids joined together to form a cell structure.
Yeah.
You know, that's just how it is. That is the nature of life. With or without man, all species compete for resources. 100%. Plants compete with each other for resources. I mean, it's what... They're just so fucking stupid.
Well, here's the thing. Let me read the second paragraph of this one, because this is
If he does want mankind to become extinct, start with yourself.
Yeah, exactly.
Just off yourself.
Like, just that's the thing. Just kill yourself.
Right.
So listen to this. My journey to advocating for voluntary human extinction began at school. I was born in the post-war baby boom in a small desert town in Oregon in the U.S. There were more new students than the elementary school could cope with, so classes overflowed into churches. In my fourth year, we were taught in the county library. People checked out books as we learned. High school was the same. The cafeteria had to be converted into classrooms. There just weren't enough resources, a situation that remains the same as we boomers enter our final decade. Like, are you just saying because more people moved into your area and that the schools got overcrowded that we ought to end the human race in its entirety?
Yeah, because
that's a little
because his town needed to build a new school. The human race should be extinct.
Like, here's the thing. Like, you read this, right?
And wait then a second.
This is on the Guardian.
A human being with no understanding of proportion or scale. again, every week we come to this problem, just does not understand scale or proportion.
Now, here's the thing. After an involuntary stint in the army, I read Paul Ehrlich's book, Population Bomb, which argued that overpopulation would lead to food shortages and famine, and soon joined the movement called Zero Population Growth. Here's the thing. That book has been proven to be completely wrong.
Proven how?
How many more people have been added to the planet, and the amount of people that are going hungry and the amount of resources we have, none of that happened. As a matter of fact, more people are not going hungry now.
Less people are starving, less people are in poverty. And there's, when was the book written? 50 years ago?
Let's see here. I don't know when that book was written. It has to be a long time.
Okay. Well, then there's three times more people on the planet than there was then.
Yeah.
You know,
50 years after the publication of the book. So
there you
it's about 50 years old.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. 50 years ago, I think there were like under 3 billion people, I want to say.
Like this guy.
No. There's probably 4 billion people. So the population has doubled since this book came out, and there's less poverty, less hunger. We're so much more efficient with use and distribution of resources, and there's more trees on the planet than there's ever been.
Yeah, and this was like, in 2018 it was 50 years old, and they're still saying that overpopulation is gonna be a problem. Like, they're lying. They're lying and not looking at the actual data. Like, for all these people that claim science is the answer, like, or that they're backing the science, they're not actually looking at the numbers and what people are living.
Here's the thing. They are partially right. I mean, there does come a point where overpopulation becomes a huge problem. I think we're a pretty good way away from that. And we have to be careful with, you know, how we do it. But I think the next step in human evolution is planetary colonization. Well, so that's what, you know, we needed to spread out.
Yeah, but here's the thing, though. In any society, once people get a little more prosperous, what's the thing that goes down?
I don't know what you're setting me up here
for. Okay. In America, we'll use America. The people that have been in America for a while, what's the birth rate, the number of people that they number of kids that they actually have?
Oh, I see what you're saying. Down. I see what you're saying.
So the numbers actually, like, it's not a constant growing thing. The growth ebbs and flows to where we're there as a planet.
So you think that naturally population is going to stabilize at some point in the near future once the entire planet is on kind of a level playing field with us right now?
Yes.
Once all the nations of the world and all the people of the world are relatively prosperous, they'll start having, you know, 2.1 kids and just like, or 1.8 kids like Americans do or whatever, you know, so essentially they'll just replace themselves for population growth. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah. As a matter of fact,
because you're completely right. It's the most of the population growth is coming from not necessarily third world nations, but lesser developed nations. They're not coming from the Western developed, you know, wealthy nations
or poorer people in those countries.
Right, but
in America.
In general, that just offsets, though.
Yeah.
You know, the population growth in America is it's still growing pretty quickly, but it's you know, kind of a shallower curve, you know, than in other parts of the world, than India or China, for example.
But no matter what, though, to try to claim that because I had to have a science class in a library when I was in high school, that now we need to end the entire population of the earth?
Well, just,
like, you're a moron.
Just the arrogance of that guy. I mean, just the sheer unadulterated arrogance. Like, you know.
And here's the thing, too. Like,
There's
a food chain. You're at the top of it. Be thankful. You're at the top of the food chain. I mean, well, you're not at the top of the food chain, obviously. But like... humans are at the top of the food chain. Here's the thing. Look, I want to make sure that I would like clean air and clean water. And, you know, I don't want us to die of any kind of bad thing that happens in the environment that we can do something about. But do these people realize that if you end capitalism and end fossil fuels, you are going to cause way more death? And this is the thing. I actually think that they know it. I think they're advocating for something that deep down they know what's going to happen and they want it to happen.
No, they don't. They don't.
I think some of them do.
I think stupidity is the driving force in the world today. I really do. I just people don't understand how things really work. People don't understand perspective, scale, nor the true functions of reality. That's what it boils down to. And that's why we have people telling us that we need to immediately end all fossil fuels and that, you know, the coronavirus is going to kill us all and that we're all going to die because the, you know, Arctic ice shelf is a little different this year.
Yeah. And okay, here's the thing, too. So there's another article that came out about surprisingly warm water found on underside of Antarctica's Doomsday Glacier.
Just handed you the beautiful segue right
yes,
there.
Yes, you did, by the way. And I wasn't even going to acknowledge it.
Didn't acknowledge it. And it disappointed me that you didn't acknowledge my fantastic segue.
Gee, I don't want to acknowledge it because I want to actually...
Have you not listened to the show?
I wanted to give it the proper respect that it was due. I mean, such an asshole. You ruined it. You've ruined everything.
You know what? At least I'm consistent because not only do I step on your segues, I step on my own.
Yes. You literally stepped on your own dick there.
I know. It's part of the show stick. We have to point out segues.
I hear you.
But no, this is more stupidity on the global warming climate change front. What is the glacier in Antarctica that this is under?
The
is
Doomsday it? Glacier. No, let me.
No,
read.
No. The name of it. It's the Thule.
Oh, Thwaites.
Yeah.
Thwaites.
I think it's Thwaites Glacier. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So hold on. This is what it said here. An underwater robot named Icefin has gone where no submersible has gone before, to the underbelly of Antarctica's Doomsday Glacier. Has uncovered unusually warm temperatures there.
Okay, wait a second. Just the fact that they call it the Doomsday Glacier. I mean, can you be any more fucking melodramatic than that?
Yeah, but here's the other thing, though. If you've never been there before, then how do you know what the temperature was going to be?
Bam!
You know what I'm saying?
That is a phenomenal point. I didn't even think of that, but you're absolutely brilliant. If they've never been there before, how can they know what the temperature is? Exactly. What is the baseline? You don't know. What you just read was the baseline. And let me tell you a little bit something about this glacier. Essentially, it's a glacier. Well, it's an ice sheet, but the glacier part of it itself is about the same size as Florida.
All right.
Okay. Roughly 70,000 square miles. And it's been that way for quite a long time. Now, the sea ice expands and contracts, but here's what they're not telling you. I mean, they call it the Doomsday Glacier, for Christ's sake. The Antarctic ice shelf has been growing for the past two decades. Okay? The Arctic ice shelf has been receding for the same period of time.
Yeah.
Okay. So less ice in the Arctic, North Pole, more ice, Antarctica, South Pole. In about 5 years ago, 6 years ago, that trend started to change. Okay. Now, guess what? The Antarctic ice shelf is starting to recede on average more. Okay. What's happening in the North? Well, the Arctic ice shelf is now on an upward trend. The ice shelves are growing more. You know, and it's just, but the Doomsday Glacier, you know, and we're sending a submersible down there for the first time, and we're finding out that the temperature is higher than has ever been recorded. Well, yeah. That's brilliant.
It's the first time it was been recorded, right? You dumbasses. Like, when I read that, that was the first thing was like, well, hold on a second here.
You know,
if you've never been there before, then how did you know what the temperature was going to be?
I didn't even catch that, and that is fucking awesome, man.
So, hold on. So, it says the hunk of ice, officially known as the whatever glacier, earned the ominous nickname because it is one of Antarctica's fastest melting glaciers. Even so, scientists were surprised to learn that waters at the ground line, the region where the glacier meets the sea, are more than 3.6 degrees Fahrenheit, 2 degrees Celsius, above the normal freezing temperature, according to news reports. Okay, if it was frozen, right, then you couldn't have put the submersible vehicle there.
Right. It's 2 degrees above freezing. That's why it's water.
Yeah, right. Like, if it was 2 degrees,
otherwise it would be glacier.
Then you would have to dig a hole.
Oh God, you know, this whole, look, the planet may very well be warming. It's the planet throughout its history has warmed and cooled and warmed and cooled and warmed and cooled. It's always changing.
That's, you know what, that's why I say that I'm not a climate change denier.
Right.
Because the climate is always changing. I'll freely admit to that.
Right.
What I'm denying is that the amount of like humans, the human toll on it, one, I don't think is actually nearly as bad as they think it is. But two, that even if it's true, I actually don't think it's as bad for the planet as you think it is. Like for us existing on the planet, like, don't get me wrong, there's a whole lot of people that live on the coasts that are fuck sandwich if it goes up a little bit because we've overbuilt on the coasts, like totally. And because.
Right. That's true.
And that's true.
And sea level might rise.
It might.
Over the next 400 or 500 years, 1,000 years. Yeah, could very well.
Could
I
very
mean,
well.
There's going to be parts that are we built on now that are going to be underwater.
Yeah. And you know what? And honestly, I do feel bad for all those incredibly rich people that built on the coasts right. That have to move.
That have to pay $50,000 a year in flood insurance.
Well, here's the thing. They don't have to pay $50,000 a year in flood insurance, though, right now, because we subsidize those motherfuckers right. Via government fiat. That if you allowed here's the thing. If you wanted to correct this problem the right way, insurance is the way to do it, because if you could make this stuff uninsurable, then people would have to move or they'd have to insure it themselves.
Right.
And if they insured it themselves, then once it was destroyed, they wouldn't rebuild there.
Well, here's the thing. Over the long period of time, I don't want to get into that insurance, but over the course of hundreds or thousands of years, like for example, 10,000 years from now, there's a very good chance that either Florida is, you know, a whole series of islands, or there's a very good chance that Florida is three times its current size because that, you know, everything that was a continental shelf is now above sea level.
Yeah.
You know, we'll have a 80-mile sandbar. And that's just the way it is. I mean, it's always going to be changing. But one thing I know for a fact is that my house is not going to be underwater in 12 years, and nobody is going to be, you know, Florida is not going to be a desert in 12 years.
Yeah.
And if it does, it's because the sun, you know, created so much energy that we're all dead from UV poisoning anyway.
Yeah.
You know?
It's
the ozone layer completely burned off because the sun fried it.
It's the same thing with the damn coronavirus. It's like you're...
Yeah.
Like, for all these people that claim that science is the answer...
But that's the thing.
They have no matter of perspective.
Well, you know, the funny thing is, and this I've seen repeatedly, and I read some of these scientific journals, specifically the ones... No, we're fine on time because I have a clock now. Alex was looking at all the numbers there. But no, I read some of these scientific journals, and when you read the climate change ones, they're so couched.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
It's like you can tell that the people writing them are like, know that they have to come to a certain conclusion. So they write it in such a way that it comes to such a conclusion.
Yes.
But you can see it. It's almost reading it. It's like they know they're not really looking at the data correctly. They know that
there's an agenda behind it.
Yeah. Yes. And you can see it. If you know what you're looking for and you understand science, you can see the agenda behind it. And everybody knows it. You know, I mean, there may be a few zealots out there, but most of the people are just worried about their funding. And that's really the bottom line. And that's why you get stories like this with the submersible.
Yeah.
You know, and the Doomsday Glacier. Yeah. You know, give me a freaking break. You know, here's the thing. Think about it this way, folks. For years, we've been talking about the polar bears. The polar bears are disappearing. Well, it turns out they're not. They're fine. Their populations are stronger than they've been in a long time. Why were we not talking about the penguins? Well, because for decades, Antarctica was growing. There was more territory for the penguins.
Yeah.
You know, so it's like you have to really read between the bullshit lines. You know, and you have to figure out when they zero in on one specific thing, don't look at that specific thing. Look at everything else that they're not talking about.
Yeah, take the 1,000-foot view of it.
Yeah, yeah. And once you do that, you go, yeah. Okay. That means nothing.
Like, and if they're trying to scare the crap out of you, then realize that it's probably a work and you're being played.
Well, no, in the coronavirus thing, I think a lot of the people are scared. I think even virologists, and I've actually heard from a couple of people in virology since this outbreak started. They're like, yeah, this is kind of overblown, but we have to be careful. They're couching it a little bit, but it's the same type of thing. If you really listen to the people doing the real science, it's, you know, they're not the alarmists that the rest of the world is. You know, and I think that it's just people's natural tendency to want to be afraid. Everybody wants to go to a horror movie, and everybody wants to be scared in their daily life. I don't know why. I think it's probably
goddamn fear porn.
No, yeah, I think that's it. I think we've evolved as a species where we don't have much to be afraid of.
That's
true. We don't have to get the fire going in our camp at night to keep the animals that would eat us at bay anymore. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And so that, I think that somewhere in our psyche, there is this need to be afraid of nature, that the natural world somehow has to present a threat to us. And the fact that it's no longer really there means we have to invent it. And maybe the viruses and global warming are the ways that our psyche copes with that missing piece of the puzzle, which is nature trying to kill us.
You know, it's funny. Okay, so, and again, I want to continue to watch this Mars movie, even though some of the angles and the agenda behind inside the movie really are starting to piss me off a little bit. But it is funny how that movie, like that show, is taking you back or taking you to that level of like, you can die here.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Oh, yeah.
Like, they're afraid of Mars, not because of any animals or anything, but just because of the environment.
Being outside will kill you.
Yeah. Just being outside is enough to kill you.
Yeah.
And so the whole thing about it is, how do you grow a colony, and how do you grow, like, how do you grow Mars to be, like, the thing that it is, and how do you make it happen? And that's what the show is about, which I think is a great premise for a show. And it's cool that they're kind of taking the 2016, like, it is done documentary style.
Right.
But it's a halfway real documentary and a halfway fake documentary.
Yeah. Well, it's almost like
a future
present
prediction documentary.
It's present led to the future, which I like that whole concept. It's really cool, yeah. Actually.
And Elon Musk is in it a lot, surprisingly enough.
But we are in a very interesting time for the evolution of our species, because we're at the point where really we've pretty much mastered Earth. But we're not ready to take the next step. And I think that's what a lot of...
We've mastered land on Earth.
Yeah.
We haven't mastered... there are tons of places on the planet we haven't gone to yet, though.
Well, but it's the same. The reason is the same. It's because being out... If you're talking about, like, living underwater, being outside will kill you.
Mm-hmm.
So we're... That's our next step, is to learn to live in places where, again, nature is trying to kill us.
Yes.
And maybe this is part of our, you know, our transitioning. You know, I tend to think of reality as, I look at it from the point of view that reality is like a giant sim game, mm-hmm. and we're a bunch of NPCs. And in that regard, it's like we have to get through this process to get to the next.
Yeah.
You see what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. And it's part of the long goal. There's stages in the process that we have to go through. And I think we're just kind of in one of those intermediary zones where we're about to switch, but we're not ready to yet. And I think a lot of that might stem from it. Or I could be completely out of my mind.
Well, and here's the other thing, that if you want to bring in like libertarianism or you know, voluntary society and freedom and liberty, where I run into a little bit of an issue is not an issue, but like, if we want to go and do another planet, like, and colonize another planet, in the beginning, if you're going there with a crew of people, you're not really free at that point, because you have a job to do of building and making a planet sustainable for human life. So you're working with a crew and a team, and there's, you know, in order to accomplish something like this, takes a...
Everybody's dependent on one another.
Yeah. Everybody is with life and death dependent on one another. Yeah,
there's no such thing as independence in that kind of situation. Yeah.
So getting from here to there requires that people get together
right.
to make it happen. Even though I do think that what they would do is to, like, here's the thing. If there was a, if there was an organization, well, SpaceX kind of started for this reason, but they don't try to fund it this way. At least I don't recognize that they try to fund it this way. If they just said, look, we need to get everybody together so as a planet we can get to Mars and help us by donating money to us.
Right.
I'm surprised they don't have more of that. Because I would think that, like, anybody that was a big Star Trek fan would be the prime person that would probably kick in $5 a month for the Mars project.
Really, that's how a publicly held corporation works, essentially. Well, I mean, you have to figure if more people want to fund that company, they would buy shares in the company. And if the demand is high, the price goes up, which means there's more value and more, you know, ability for the company to raise funds. So essentially the market,
I guess, in a weird way, you're right. Yeah, I guess in a weird way, there's a little bit of that going on right now.
So if you want to donate to SpaceX, buy some shares. Are they?
I might have to do that.
Is SpaceX publicly traded?
I don't know if SpaceX is publicly traded.
I think it is. I think
just
Elon Musk is the majority stockholder.
Oh, is that what it is?
Yeah, I think they are publicly traded. They might not be. I don't know. Are you Googling that?
Yes, I am.
Yeah, because you know what? Now that I think about it, I might throw some money at SpaceX. Fire up my Ameritrade account here.
All right, we're going to find out here.
All right.
Okay, wow, that's funny. Okay, so SpaceX, a space transportation services company founded by Musk in 2002, has become one of the most valuable private companies in the world. So it's a private company. Valued at an estimated $28 billion, SpaceX president and COO Gwynne Shortnell told him, they can't go public until we're regularly flying to Mars.
Oh, okay. Well, I'll be standing in line for that IPO.
Well, let's see here. So... will Elon Musk's SpaceX go public? So it looks like it's a privately owned.
It's privately held now, so you can't do that. So,
well, that sucks.
Well,
and he has no plans to bring the company public
until he's going to Mars.
As the goals of the company do not align with shareholders.
You know, that's what I love about Elon Musk. He's like, I'm going to do this my way because it's what I want to do. Yeah, he really is a visionary. The guy is phenomenal.
Yeah.
You know, and win or lose, you know, now Tesla is publicly traded.
Yeah. But Tesla's a different deal, though.
Yeah, but even so, they're not, I don't think they're profitable yet. I think they're still hemorrhaging money.
Yeah.
You know, but, you know, that's his philosophy. He wants to get these things done. He's the exact opposite of that guy you were talking about that wants to extinguish the human race. He's
hold on. It's not even funny how exactly the opposite he is.
Yeah, literally. He wants to ensure the survival of the human race. That's
his whole thing.
His entire focus in life is ensuring the survival of the human race. I really think that he's one of the greatest living human beings, if not the greatest living human being there is right now.
Well, here's the thing is that if he's the guy that puts this thing forward,
right,
and there was something that happened to Earth,
right,
then you can thank Elon Musk for the continuation of the human race.
Well, regardless of what, if something bad happens to Earth or not, regardless, he took us to the next level of
as a species.
As a species. Actually, he will be the one responsible for the the human evolution into multiple species, because here's the thing a lot of people don't realize, that after a few generations of living on Mars, which has 60% of the Earth's gravity, people will change. People will start to be 8 feet tall, and people will be not nearly as strong. So they'll be stronger, skinnier, have less muscle tone, and after a few generations, they will be genetically different from humans. Now, I don't know how long it'll take for them to evolve into a completely separate species, but if you put a human being on a different planet, after enough generations, they're not a human being anymore. There's something different because they adapt to the environment.
I mean, aren't they still a human being, though?
Not necessarily. No.
What would you call them, then?
Well, here's the thing.
Martian?
When you have a divergent population, I mean, think about it. You had, at one point in time, you had Homo sapien, and not Cro-Magnon, what's the Neanderthal.
Neanderthal.
Okay. They were two completely separate species, but they were different enough to where they could breed. Okay. I think you would have that. So if a 20th generation Martian came back to Earth, they could probably still interbreed, but they wouldn't necessarily be the same species. They would be genetically different enough to be a separate species. And eventually it's going to be radical. And you're going to have radical differences as those branches of Homo sapien, you know, evolve on other planets over many generations. They're going to be unrecognizable.
Yeah. I mean, I do think that.
In fact, I have a theory.
Okay.
That if intelligent life is visiting our planet, and if there's little gray guys and really tall, skinny, you know, people with no ears and no noses, it's just future humans coming back.
Really?
Yeah. I mean, it makes sense. Because in what other scenario, why are all these people that, you know, abductees, quote unquote, whether it's real or not, if it is real, assuming that it is real, the abductees always describe generally two different types, little short squat with big heads and tiny skinny bodies, or really tall with long appendages and skinny, skinny arms and legs and things like that. No noses, you know, things like that. It would make total sense that the human species evolving on different planets would turn into that. But they always have two arms, two legs, a torso, two eyes, a mouth, you know, all in the right places, but they're just very different looking from us. That would be how, you know, the species would evolve. So chances are that aliens are not alien at all.
There you
if
go.
They exist.
There you go.
So there you go.
That sounds kind of funny, actually. So.
It makes sense, though.
No, it does.
If they figure definitely out time travel.
No. You're right. No. You're absolutely right. Which time travel is probably, well, we'll get into that at a later time, though.
Einstein-Rosen bridges, there's plausibility there.
Yeah. So the other thing that
Now we're over time.
No. We got. Well, let's talk about this last trip, okay. Last thing before we end.
See, now I know that we're running long.
Oh yeah, we're definitely running long though. So let's talk about this first one though, about the sheriff's office in Hillsborough County.
No. There's too much to talk about on that. I want to save that for hour number two, folks. Listen. Tune in for hour number two. If you're not a subscriber, go to patreon.com/unattendedbaggage. You got to hear how the Hillsborough County Sheriff stepped in it knee deep this week and got their ass handed to them by the online community. It's a great story and how it's probably keeping one dude out of jail. So this has been Unattended Baggage. Stay tuned. Hour number two coming up for subscribers. We'll see you on the other side.